Yeah, you are. You could have, I mean, it would be like almost like an art piece, have it just on its own. And can you imagine sitting there, you know, pouring the wine and putting the needle down, yeah. Right?
It
could be you.
It's very rewarding. Yes, I do miss those days of, you know, listening to vinyl because I think vinyl is the best. But it's some sort of a kind of a cool thing just to see them playing that. Like if you go to a restaurant in Minneapolis, there's some that play, you sit at the bar and they play records.
Yeah.
It's outstanding.
The Tally Gallery on the Bemidji State University campus is displaying Mitch Blessing's ephemera exhibit. It's now through June 10th. There'll be an artist reception coming up Tuesday, April 1st from 2 to 4 o'clock.
This is 91.7 KEXE Grand Rapids. You did this already?
Yeah, sorry. I did it early.
Oh, you snuck it in early.
It's not you. Coming up at 7:20, we're going to be bringing you the Board of News Roundup with Marshall Helmberger. But first, it is local news.
For KEXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. Filings opened Wednesday for the Senate District 6 special election. DFLer Nikki Hardy of Pequot Lakes has joined five Republicans who filed since the opening. At least two other Republicans and one other Democrat publicly announced their intentions to run. Candidates have until Tuesday to file. Early voting for the special primary will begin April 9th. The primary election day is April 15th. The Rock Ridge School Board tabled a vote Monday that would shed 15 staff members from its budget as part of its $2.5 million of cuts. Iron Range Today reports 20 people spoke to the board for more than an hour, mostly in opposition to proposed cuts to the music program. Teachers and parents worry that cutting electives would deter open enrollment in the district. Parent Molly Peltier says the music department is already devastated.
Without quality personnel, these world-class facilities and this cutting-edge educational model that have rightfully received so much praise and media attention will be nothing more than an empty shell and an even emptier collection of trendy buzzwords.
Laurentian Elementary Principal Angie Williams says cuts to physical education have her considering up to 50 kids in one gym class. Board member Jennifer Bonner says that sounds chaotic.
I think we're looking at liability, you know, and kids getting hurt.
Iron Range Today says the board wanted extra time to decide on staff cuts. A working session is set for 4 p.m. Friday. Decision day is Monday. The district has until Tuesday to decide on tenured staff cuts. Hibbing made $1.8 million in staff cuts last week and still must cut another $1 million. A bipartisan bill to change the exemption process for schools with Native American mascots is making progress in the state Senate, giving Grand Rapids a chance to keep the Thunderhawk. Megan Buffington has more.
The 2023 state law prohibiting American Indian mascots requires schools wanting to keep their mascot to get unanimous approval from Minnesota's 11 tribal nations and the Tribal Nations Education Committee. DFL Senator Mary Kunish of New Brighton authored that legislation. She's also behind the new bill that would instead allow districts to request an exemption from the nearest tribal nation. It was laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill earlier this month. The Grand Rapids Thunderhawk was denied an exemption because of its apparent reference to a 19th century companion of Sitting Bull, though the district says it was not aware of Chief Thunderhawk when it chose the name in the 90s. Grand Rapids has put off making any changes. School board member Dave Cowan told the Senate Education Finance Committee that a change would cost an estimated $800,000.
I can assure you that we have much better things to spend our limited resources on than the determination, removal, and replacement of a fictional mascot, especially if our local Native American community supports the Thunderhawks.
The Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe is the nearest tribal nation to Grand Rapids. Band Director of Education Lori Harper says if the bill passes, Leech Lake would work with the Mille Lacs and Fond du Lac tribes to decide how to proceed.
We would all determine the best way, upon the advice of our tribal governing bodies, to move forward. And I don't know what that even looks like at this point.
Kunish, who is of Standing Rock Sioux descent, has advocated for the discontinuation of Native American mascots because of their harm to Native youths. DFL and Republican legislators have attempted to modify the mascot ban several times in the past 2 years. This is the first time any effort received a committee hearing. Megan Buffington, KAXE News.
MnDOT and St. Louis County will host an informational meeting on road construction happening this year on Highway 53 in Eveleth. The meeting will be 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Rockridge High School Athletics Commons. Construction is expected to begin the same day and will include removal and replacement of bridges on Highways 53 and 37 and construction of a roundabout at Progress Parkway. There will also be resurfacing and intersection improvements. Motorists can expect lane closures. A recording of the information discussed will be available at MnDOT's website after the meeting. That's it for the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
Good morning, 7:06. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show. It's People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Coming up, we are going to be hearing the latest installment of StoryCorps. We learn about an African-American firefighter. If you missed our conversation, it was just last week, I think, with the chief, the fire chief of Grand Rapids, right?
It was last week, yes.
Yeah, that story's available on our website too, kaxc.org. I think people were in the mood for a good story because it got shared all over the internet and people wanted to hear how much he had saved the life.
Yeah, he saved the life. And also I think we learned a lot about how to take care of ourselves in case of a fire. A lot of people just take that for granted.
Yeah. We've also got, that's John Bauer. I'm Heidi Holt. And we've got Marshall Helmberger in the latest news from northeastern Minnesota, including the final decision to go to 4-day school years next year to save money.
Wow.
Yeah.
Marshall digs deep. Is that just over there, northeast, or is it just
yep.
the, okay. Wow.
Yeah, St. Louis County School District, and I think it's the Iron Range. You know, St. Louis County is so huge. I don't know that it's not in the Duluth District of St. Louis County, but yeah, we'll hear more about that. That's coming up, and you can catch all the latest news stories at our website as well at kaxe.org. Right now, we've got last week's What's for Breakfast. We can talk about What's for Breakfast. Last week's conversation is the top story right now. Do you remember we talked to a woman who was on her way to school? She was a teacher driving.
Yes.
And what she had for breakfast? Thunder buns.
A thunder bun, yeah.
And we got a photo from her.
Oh, it's a beautiful photo. I understand it now.
Yep. You can see it.
It's kind of almost a, I don't want to say a bite size, maybe 3 bites. Just a round.
Yeah, a little
bun.
Handheld.
Yeah.
You know, it looks good. So you can join us this morning is my point. You can make a reservation. You can text 218-326-1234. That means I'll give you a call at about 7:45 or when you hear the theme music. We'd also like you to join us.
Bemidji Symphony Orchestra presents Mambo, a concert featuring percussionist Eric Sundin, Sunday, March 30th.
Mambo. Mambo?
I would say Mambo. Mambo. It's Mambo?
No. Yeah. You said, no. Go on.
It's Sunday, March 30th at the Bemidji High School Auditorium. Tickets are more information at BemidjiSymphony.org.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Republicans on Capitol Hill have worked quickly to confirm President Trump's cabinet nominees.
Yes, some have faced contentious battles. Others have sailed right through Senate votes. There was only one pick left to appear in front of the Senate, and that was New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, President Trump's choice to be ambassador to the United Nations. But that changed yesterday when he pulled her nomination, saying he's asked her to stay in the House of Representatives.
Here to explain why is NPR political reporter Alina Moore. She's here with me in our studios. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Elise Stefanik's nomination was expected to be an easy vote. So what happened?
Well, Stefanik is a close ally of the president, and she's really been seen as a rising star within the party. She was elected in 2014 and at the time was the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. She was a vocal Trump defender during his 2019 impeachment hearing and later rose to a top leadership position within the party. All of this was supposed to make her confirmation process appear easy. The problem, it turned out, Michelle, wasn't Stefanik, but House Republicans and their razor-thin majority. You know, on most bills, the party can only afford to lose one or two votes. And, you know, there was a chance Stefanik's departure would only make things harder, which Trump decided was too risky. He wrote on social media yesterday that Republicans needed to maintain every seat they can.
Okay, but Republicans have known about their razor-thin majority as far back as November,
right,
when Trump picked Stefanik. So why now?
Yeah, I mean, well, since the fall, two other Republicans have left office. Former Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz, who resigned before the start of the term, and former Florida Congressman Mike Waltz, who now serves as Trump's national security advisor. Special elections are underway for both of those seats, and Republicans are easily expected to hold on in Gaetz's district. But the race for Waltz's seat is shaping up to be way more competitive than expected. And, you know, Stefanik won her race by double digits last fall. But, you know, the decision to withdraw her nomination shows that Republicans just don't want to take any more risks right now in any more races, especially when there's still a long to-do list on Capitol Hill. You know, Trump has done a lot by executive action, but in terms of legislation, it's a different story. Republicans want to make Trump's 2017 tax cuts permanent. They also want more funding for defense and the president's immigration agenda. So again, Michelle, this really is a reminder of just how fragile the GOP majority in the House is right now.
What's been the reaction on Capitol Hill?
Well, for her part, Stefanik told Fox News last night that she supported Trump's decision.
I have been proud to be a team player. The president knows that. He and I had multiple conversations today, and we are committed to delivering results on behalf of the American people.
House Speaker Mike Johnson has invited Stefanik back to House GOP leadership, but it's unclear what role that may be since her old job has since been filled. And, you know, though Johnson expressed enthusiasm about having her back, on the Democratic side, they're framing this whole moment pretty differently. In a statement from House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, he said, quote, House Republicans are running scared.
That is NPR political reporter Elena Moore. Elena, thank you.
Thanks.
Time now for StoryCorps. Robert Logan is a firefighter in San Diego. He sat down with his friend and colleague, Jason Shanley, to talk about his childhood dream of being a firefighter.
I grew up 3 to 4 houses from a fire station. As a youngster, the fire engine would go by and I would have my palms and my nose smashed against the window.
I'm picturing a little kid with a little afro.
With a dirty diaper and a faded Superman t-shirt. I thought that was the best thing in the world. When I became old enough, I went by the fire station and inquired about becoming a firefighter, but I was discouraged. And he used to be my barber when we both had hair.
No one would believe that either.
You were cutting my hair one day and he said, hey, I met these black firefighters who are having a EMT class at a fire station. So we went to class together. They offered me a job driving an ambulance for $7.25 an hour. And everybody thought I was crazy. It was rough. Just watching my bank account dwindle. But I had faith in the chief when he hired me. We had a lunch. And he told me, unfortunately, young man, you're going to have to be head and shoulders above everybody else. I knew my competition had a bachelor's degree, so I went out and got a master's degree. I knew my competition didn't have executive chief fire officer certification, so I went out and got that. The one thing he didn't tell me, when you do that, you think that the barriers will be eliminated. They're not.
One of the things I love about you is that you're able to turn real negative situations into something super positive.
I was raised by my grandmother. She lived through the civil rights movement, and she was one of the first black nurses in San Diego. So she endured a lot, but you couldn't get her to say a bad thing about anybody. She instilled those values in me, and the last thing I wanted to do was let her down. My grandmother dated this guy when I was like 6. As a firefighter, I saw him in a care facility. I I explained who I was, and I could just see his face brighten up when he remembered his last couple of days on this earth. I brought back some good memories before he passed away.
He remembered the little guy with the t-shirt plastered against the window.
Yeah.
And now you're the highest ranking African-American male in our fire department who just interviewed for the position of the fire chief. All the things that you've been through for you to be where you are right now is a testament to the type of man you are. So, yeah, it's dope.
Thank you.
Jason Shanley and Robert Logan at StoryCorps. Their conversation is part of the StoryCorps Brightness in Black project, sharing stories of Black love, joy, and triumphs.
Major support for StoryCorps comes from Subaru. The 2025 Subaru Outback features standard symmetrical all-wheel drive, including safety features like EyeSight Driver Assist technology. Learn more at Subaru.com/Outback. And from Dignity Memorial, pre-planning a celebration of life can allow more time to focus on life's little moments. Dignity Memorial is dedicated to professionalism and compassion in every detail. More at dignitymemorial.com.
This is NPR News.
National Public Radio's Morning Edition, you hear it here on KAXE. Coming up, local news with Marshall Helmberger in the Border News Roundup. That's the news from northeastern Minnesota. We do have a winter weather advisory that is going on, and what we are expecting is things like rain, snow, sleet, possible thunderstorms.
Just a nice mix. You said, yeah. Make it sound so pleasant,
mm-hmm,
Heidi.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, remember last weekend was going to be a big,
yes,
huge thing, and it was for some people,
yeah,
but not so much here, although the roads weren't great. I don't know if you were out that day. They were weirdly slushy.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're looking at temperatures today, though, in the upper 30s to mid to even upper 40s, and breezy east winds 10 to 20. Rain could turn freezing this evening, and temperatures 26 to 29.
So we're lacking snow.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean we're going to be lacking mosquitoes this year early? I think so.
What? Are snow
if
and
we're
mosquitoes?
Lacking snow and moisture... We don't. What I've heard is we just do not have enough moisture, and that is perfect for not getting mosquitoes, not having moisture.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. We have a lot of people coming from different countries, and the first thing they ask is, what are the mosquitoes like? You know, that's a bad rap.
Who has people coming from other countries?
We do. We have other people from other countries coming to our... home.
Okay.
And one of the things they always preface is, you know, how are the mosquitoes?
Okay.
And how do you respond to that as a Minnesotan? Oh, that'd be fine. They're normal. Mm-hmm. I want to thank Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their energy forward strategy. More at mnpower.com/energyforward.
It is time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, editor and publisher of The Timberjay. Morning, Marshall. Thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Marshall, let's start off with a story that we talked about last week about the four-day school week for St. Louis County School District. Anything new there?
Well, yeah, the board, after a considerable discussion and after hearing from parents last week, they voted 4-3 this week on Tuesday to move to a four-day school week for next year. It was narrowly approved, 4-3, and even the ones, I would say, the ones who were opposed to it were more just concerned about whether or not all the details had been worked out. And, you know, I think some of the board members who voted in favor of it said, well, they were confident that by the time they, you know, September rolls around, they'll have those details. So I think, you know, there's general support across the board for the idea. You know, it was approved, so that will be the switch for next year.
And also in education, you know, there's probably been some fears about some schools closing. What have you heard about that?
Yeah, well, that's certainly been part of the discussion in the St. Louis County School District, mostly by parents, however. It's been parents from the Northwood School near Cook that have advocated mostly in social media for closing the Tower Sedan Elementary as a way to reduce the expenses of the district. They've the folks in Northwoods have been concerned about some teacher cuts that have hit there fairly hard because they've had a significant drop in their enrollment over the last few years. And so the district is trimming some of their teaching staff. And so parents are not happy about that. And so they're advocating closing the elementary school, which has not had a real any kind of an enrollment decline. Their enrollment's been quite stable for a number of years. And it's they've got good test scores. I mean, there's really not a academic reason for closing the school. And it turns out that even there's not a financial reason either. It turns out that the Tower Sedan Elementary does benefit from a number of special sources of funding that, you know, not every school gets. That includes some extra PILT money, that's payment in lieu of taxes, for that was approved during the creation of the Lake Vermilion State Park. And so that that money helps to, you know, fund operations at the school. They also have a high percentage of free and reduced lunch students, qualified students, and that means they get a considerable amount of compensatory aid. So there's some other things that they get that makes that school financially very viable. And so there really is no reason to do that. And the other thing, I did talk to the finance director this week. We got answers to a lot of questions. And, you know, the biggest thing they're concerned about that was driving their financial situation is the loss of enrollment. You know, they've lost almost 200 students, you know, over the last few years. And, you know, that has a big impact on the bottom line because that's how schools are financed, is based on their enrollment. And so, you know, closing schools is not a particularly good option, you know, when it comes to enrollment, because you're going to be losing a lot of those students, especially, you know, because of open enrollment. You know, those students are going to go elsewhere. And in the case of 2142 or the St. Louis County School District, they're not necessarily going to go to schools, you know, elsewhere in that district, especially Tower Sedan right now. I think there's four different school districts that send buses here every morning to pick up students because of the high school closure. So, you know, a lot of elementary kids could get on those same buses and, you know, be going to other school districts. So, and the school district knows that, which is another reason that they said closing the Tower Sedan school is definitely not on the table, and nor closures of any of the other schools in the district.
Well, and that has repercussions just for the communities of Tower Sedan, right? I mean, when a school closes, it's not great for a community. So this is good.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the closure of the high school was a significant blow.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another story. Let's talk a little bit about, I was going to do the Trump thing last, okay? Let's tell us about the story about stakeholders opposing the sale of Minnesota Power's parent company. What's happening there?
Well, we have a proposal by a subsidiary of BlackRock, and they're a huge venture capital firm, and the subsidiary is known as Global Infrastructure Partners, and they've teamed up with the Canada Pension Plan Fund to make an offer. It's about a $6.2 billion offer to acquire Elite, and they're the parent company of Minnesota Power, and they've identified Elite as a company that is going to need a substantial amount of capital investment over the next few years, as part because, you know, they're making this transition to clean energy, and that does require, you know, an injection of capital to do that. They're also looking at expanding their transmission capacity, and so all of these costs, you know, are going to have to, you know, the funding is going to have to come from somewhere. Right now, you know, Elite is a publicly traded company, and so they can, you know, go to the sort of the public investment markets to get that funding. And there's really no indication they've had any problem getting the investment capital for these changes. But these venture capital firms certainly see the advantage of, utility, which generally are fairly stable, and they do have, while they're regulated in terms of their rates, you know, they are allowed a certain return on investment, and so they see a relatively safe way to invest lots of money and get a good return on it, and so that's what they're looking at. And they say they also have some expertise that they can bring to the table that might help the utility run more efficiently, or ALLETE in general. But at this point, the concern is that, having this private firm there, or these two firms, are that they're going to be focused very much on the bottom line and on maximizing return, and that that's going to come at the expense of ratepayers. And so you have an unusual coalition here, really. You've got consumer groups here locally who are opposed to this. You've got the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and you also have the large power users, and those would be like the taconite plants, so the larger wood products plants that are using power from Minnesota Power. They're all opposed to this, and it's mostly out of concerns about rates and the lack of any public interest in this public interest benefit in this proposed acquisition. Now, this does have to go before the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission, and we'll see how they rule. I mean, they could say, no, you're not going to do this. It's not in the public interest, and that would end this proposal. And that's probably where this is headed, just given the kind of universal opposition, unless the companies have got these two acquiring companies have got a really good argument to make, which so far they haven't really seemed to have had. It would seem that this proposal would probably be in trouble.
Before we go, let's talk about President Trump's administration and an executive order that is putting mining as a top priority on federal lands. How do you see that affecting northern Minnesota?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing is going to be it certainly does reignite, I think, the Twin Metals project, which had kind of been on hold or, really kind of seen as over as a result of some of the decisions that were made under the Biden administration. You know, they had canceled mineral leases for the site and then had put in the 20-year mineral ban affecting the area that Twin Metals had wanted to mine. So, I mean, I think there's certainly going to be greater interest and some movement potentially on that, as well as the New Range Copper, which we used to know as PolyMet. That project could get a push from this. It'll be interesting to see, whether that happens. Now, we'll find out fairly soon because the Department of Interior, under this order, has until April 10th to identify what it would call priority projects, and these would be projects that have already advanced to some degree, have a proposal of a mine plan or something like that that's been submitted for review. And so we'll see whether or not, New Range and also Twin Metals are identified as priority projects. And if they are, then that would likely advance them. I mean, one of the things that's interesting about this order is that it not only makes mining the top priority, it also would allow for expedited environmental review, and it would also allow the government then, under the Defense Production Act, to actually fund companies that to build these mines. I mean, they could provide them with grants, they could provide them with loans, loan guarantees, all kinds of other financing, so we'd actually be paying these companies in some cases to build these mines. This is a significant change from in the past. It would also exempt them from some reporting requirements. So, I mean, it's got the potential to have some potentially shady type deals that could be made, and I think that's definitely a concern given the Trump administration's approach to business and the economy right now. So we're going to see. Now, I mean, I will say that while I think this certainly advances a couple of projects here or could make them more viable, the state still has a role here. And, you know, as we saw in the first Trump administration, the state had a very different view about the Twin Metals project compared to the Trump administration. And, you know, they still have a significant role in permitting. My guess is the state would probably do like it did in Trump's first term, in which it did a separate environmental, or at least started doing a separate environmental impact statement on the Twin Metals proposal, which I think was came out in like 2019, and it was never completed. I think they would probably do that separately. And, you know, the state process could take, the usual amount of time, which would be a few years at minimum, so even if the federal environmental review was expedited, I don't think the state review would be done. And, of course, the state has to do a significant amount of permitting, including the permit to mine. So, you know, those are all things that would have to be done at the state level. I don't see that this executive order has any ability to, you know, overturn that process. So, it still would be many years down the road, and we could have a new administration by then. So who knows where this is really headed. I've noticed that a lot of these executive orders that the president has signed in recent weeks tend to be more performative. I mean, they sound good, but when you actually dig into the details, there's less there than meets the eye. You know, I think a lot of this is for, he gets a little news coverage about something he's doing. It makes it look like something's happening. But in many cases, I think there won't be much that ultimately comes from some of these executive orders. But, you know, time will tell.
So we've been asking folks, let's get our mind off of politics, I guess, is where I'm headed here. Our question of the week, your favorite signs of spring. So what's happening at your bird feeders, Marshall?
Well, we have I've noticed that the purple finches, the male purple finches, are very bright now. They tend to brighten up just as the start of the breeding season. And, normally we don't even have purple finches here at this point, but we've had a few that hung around all winter. We'll have some that are hanging out, but I've noticed that the males have gotten nice and bright. So that tells me, spring is coming.
That's great. It's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read about these stories at their website. It's timberj.com. Marshall, thanks for your time. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
MJ Lenderman, you're listening to the Friday Morning Show. It is member-supported and people-powered KAXC. Thank you for tuning in today. It's 7:33. I'm Heidi Holton. Don't forget, coming up after our Daily Dose of Phenology, it's What's for Breakfast, and that means it'll be your time to call in. The number to call or to text, 218-326-1234.
It's fun to hear people-powered.
Is it? Good.
Yeah, it is, because that's what it is.
Yeah, has been since the very beginning. There's something like over 70 hours a week are hosted by volunteers on KXC, and we could not be doing this kind of broadcast without all of the people behind the scenes and on the air, and we are just grateful to you. And in this time of like changing world, we want you to know how local we are and how committed we continue to be, and we need you. We need you on board.
Yeah, people powered means people who listen. It also means people who support it. And we'd love to have you become a member. Keep it going. Local.
Yep.
Lots of local.
We broadcast to the small towns and the townships of northern Minnesota, places like Fauston and Nashwauk and Meadowlands and Emily and Virginia and McGregor and Solway. All these little towns, Tower and Hill City and Waubun and Crosby, all across northern Minnesota, telling the stories of this region.
And, you know, once in a while we do get someone who says, oh, what the heck kind of music was that? Well, that's kind of what you get. You get a variety of music here, stuff you'd never. I am so out of touch with music. Every time I listen, I've never even heard of some of these bands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really
good.
New
bands, new music.
And the volunteers have a passion. You can just hear it in their voice. It's special that they get to be on and do what they do. I want to thank Edward Jones, financial advisor, Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC. We also want to thank the Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji, gathering at 10 a.m. on Sundays now through May at the Headwaters Peace Center. HUF is an inclusive space to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. Learn more at headwatersuu.org.
It's time for best wishes. We do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. Oh, and there is a winter weather advisory out there.
Oh.
Snow, rain, ice, you know, that kind of thing. But just watch your local weather. It might be one of those, we hear a lot about it, but it may not come to fruition, but it might. So yeah. We'll keep you posted as the day goes on. It is March 28th, and very special anniversary greeting to Kathleen Maloney and David Hermerding in Brainerd. They are celebrating 33 years and going strong, says Kathleen. Best wishes to you.
Meredith Latimer, 36 years old today. Are you kidding me? Anna Gabris is 33, I think. Heidi, I have dots on my... You better take the rest. I fill in dots while we're off the air, and they've bled through. I can't read this.
Okay, you should think about that before you do
I know. Coloring. Well, now I will think about
it. Al Lipke, happy birthday to you, our good friend Al from Hibbing. Natalie Frank turns 62 today. She's from Shevlin. And Carla McKenzie is 65 today from Eveleth. And we just heard from Fred from Hackensack. He says happy birthday to our grandson, Will, who turns 13 today.
Will, 13. Whew. Tomorrow I can read it. Sydney Montgomery's 20. And also Allison Tellickson is 20 years old. So happy birthday, happy anniversary to all of you. What do you got fired up here?
A little rubble bucket.
Oh, of course.
Said I'd make it to the party, but I've got a lot going on. The lioness gave a feast for 40 of her body, then slept on the ground till the flower grew out. Yeah. I said we'd walk around the city and catch a cab at exactly dawn. I promise with my eyes, and I know that the peach tree skipped to you, Fruity. Next spring dropped her flowers on the ground.
Find the earth again.
and catch a cab at exactly dawn. I promise with my eyes, and I know that the peach tree skipped to you, Fruity, and the next spring dropped her flowers on the ground.
The song is called Fruity. It's by Rubble Bucket, and you're listening to People Powered KAXE. Carol in Apple Valley is like you, John. She just texted in. She said, I so appreciate the People Powered tagline, especially in these times. It is true.
Rubble Bucket. That was a great song.
Thanks.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't make it, of course. Well, I just chose it this morning.
Thank you for playing it.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
You are welcome.
Enlightening us a little bit this morning.
That's right.
Because we're going to get snow, possibly. 4 inches of snow. Maybe some schedizzle, freezing rain tonight. Mm-hmm. Sounds ugly, but sometimes it doesn't materialize. But just beware that we could get 4 inches of snow anywhere from Itasca, St. Louis, Aiken, Cass, Beltrami, Clearwater, and Crow Wing counties. And rain likely this afternoon, highs from 39 to 48. Breezy, east winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Saturday, slight chance of snow, mostly cloudy with highs in the mid to upper 30s. Northeast winds up to 20, evening lows in the mid 20s. So if any of that stuff turns to ice, it's going to get a little bit ugly out there. And then Sunday, mostly cloudy, slight chance of snow with temps in the upper 30s, maybe even 40. Northeast winds up to 20 miles per hour. Question of the week is, what signs of spring are you looking forward to? Heidi, you've been on the air most of the whole week. What are the common themes with that? What people are looking for?
Oh, it's usually birds.
Yeah.
It is seeing the buds.
Seeing a robin.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Or sap running, you know. There's all kinds of things out there that kind of make us, signal to us that things are changing. And, you know, that's kind of the beauty of where we live in this world is we get very different seasons that mm-hmm. really get you, let you kind of refocus each season of what you're doing in life, you know? That's too big?
I think birds are very common. The birds froze me yesterday. It was like, oh my God, I went back to being like 15 years old, 12 years old, hearing the birds, the blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds this time of year. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't sound that great in the summertime, but man, they do in the spring. So there you go. We would like to thank North Holmes Children and Family Services, providing compassionate mental health services to children and families at home, school, and in the community. More information at northholmes.org.
Time for John Latimer and our daily dose of phenology.
Today's date, March 28th, 2005, the great blue herons returned. This is the average date for the returning of the great blue herons. The earliest that I have recorded is on the 17th of March in 1995, and the latest was on April 4th in 2001. The interesting thing about great blue herons is that they are remarkably reliable. When I look at all of my records, 33 years of records, only three of those dates fall outside the boundaries of the returning dates for blue herons. The 21st of March, twice, the 17th of March, once. Other than that, all other return dates are from March 24th to April 4th. And that's pretty astonishing. That's a pretty narrow range for returning birds. If you look at robins over that same period, their dates run from as early as March 6th to as late as April 10th. The great blue herons obviously have a different trigger for migration, and it has to be day length because they are over 33 years remarkably consistent.
If you missed Phenology this week, you can check it out at kaxe.org, and we highly recommend. John, are you signed up for that Season Watch newsletter?
No, I'm not.
What?
I'm sorry.
I'm going to sign you. Actually, I could sign you up right now.
Sign me up right now. Couple
you get
of clicks.
It once. Yeah, you just put in an email address right at our website. And the buzz, do you get our buzz?
How no, I don't get the buzz.
Wow.
Is that, I have to sign up for the buzz?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
I'm signing John up right now. It's right on our main page. All you do is put in an email. You're getting both of them now. And I'm going to have you report next week, okay?
Okay.
see if it clutters up your inbox or it's stuff you don't need. I just want you to see. The Buzz tells you what's been going on this week with KXE and the news and our programming. And then Season Watch is going to give you each week things to look for this week in the ditch, in the, you know, different places of what you might see.
Yeah, but they're also going to see stuff, images also. The Season Watch, people post images of what they're already seeing.
That is different than the newsletter.
Okay.
I'm talking about the Season Watch newsletter. It's based on that on the Facebook page, which is great. But the newsletter, once a week, you get all kinds of information about what's happening in nature right now.
Nice.
And you get the stories of the week that have to do with nature. And it's great. And Charlie Mitchell, the phenology coordinator, has such a great sense of humor that you will like it.
All right.
It's very fun.
Sounds great.
All signed up, but ready to go, KEXE.org.
Are you ready to go on What's for Breakfast? All you got to do is be a member and give us a call, 326-1234.
How about a 2 and 8 in there? 218-326-1234. Go cough it out.
It don't matter if you're tall. It don't matter if you're small. It don't matter if you're blue or green or any shape at all. 'Cause I'll be yours and you'll be mine to last. And we'll be friends holding fast. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to play a part. What better thing could ever be than a kindly heart? And I'll have yours, and you have mine to last. We'll be friends, holding fast. Talk all day, I'll listen. There's nothing we'll be missing. We don't need to paint the world. Everything will glisten. And when we sing our songs, everyone...
We are looking for you. What? We're looking for you to join us on What's for Breakfast, 218-326-1234. Be our guest.
It's truly a highlight of the week.
Cows jumping over the moon.
Old wrinkles start to twinkle when they hear our tune.
And all the while, we can only smile. 'Cause we'll be friends, coming back in style.
Play it, dude. We need you to join us this morning on What's for Breakfast. It's going to be a lot of fun. You don't have to have Thunder Buns. You don't have to have something fancy. You can have a cup of coffee, or maybe you are. Maybe you are headed to your favorite restaurant for that breakfast you love to order on Friday mornings. 218-326-1234. Join us this morning.
Sing our songs. Everyone will sing along. 'Cause we'll be friends and they will see exactly what friends can be. We'll be light as balloons, cows jumping over the moon.
Old wrinkles start to twinkle when they hear our tune.
And all the while, we can only smile. 'Cause we be friends, strutting back in style.
Time for What's for Breakfast on the Friday Morning Show. We pull up a chair to one of our members' kitchen tables. We get to know them a little bit better. Suzanne Derby joins us now. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning, Heidi and John.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
I had an irrational fear this morning that you would stop What's for Breakfast. I didn't want to hear you beg.
I know. I am too.
Oh,
we're pitiful.
But really,
you hear it in his voice. Have you had your breakfast yet?
No, but I can tell you what I'm going to have.
Okay.
I'm going to have Madras mix, which is better than Cheerios, and some European-style yogurt and coffee, and maybe a Cara orange or grapefruit.
Mm. I love the Caracaras. They're still really good right now, aren't they?
I can't buy anything else.
I know. And I've been eating, is it wrong to eat two oranges a day?
Oh, no.
They're so
no.
good. But let's get back
more
to...
More the merrier.
What's the cereal that's better than Cheerios?
Madras Mix.
Madras Mix.
Well, couldn't they come up with a better name if it's so good? Yeah, I'm going to have some Madras Mix this morning. What exactly is it?
Well, it's salty, not sweet.
Okay.
Oh.
It's a spicy mix from East India, and I first ate it after I left Grand Rapids when I went to East Africa in a little restaurant with sour milk, and it's just a mix of, oh, I don't know, chickpeas and other grains, and it's addictive.
So
sounds lovely.
Do you make this mix? You must make this. I don't see it.
No, I'm not good. I'm not that good.
Oh, okay.
Well, where do you order up Madras in the United States?
Well, I don't advocate for having it sent long distance, but most Indian stores have it, and the one down the street from where I live 3/4 of the time has like 5 different kinds, and I have a favorite.
Hmm.
So do you have that with the European yogurt?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just straight up, the two of them together.
And is that kind of to remind you of the original time you had it with the sour milk?
Yes.
Okay.
Always. Well, it always takes me back.
Aww.
That's deep, Heidi, the time you had it with the sour milk.
Yeah.
So it's something dry.
I'm impressed.
It's not granola, is it? Is it granola?
Well, it's kind of like an East Indian granola, but salty rather than sweet.
Mm, okay.
So the chickpeas are crunchy?
It's crunchy.
Okay.
It's small, crunchy.
Nice.
Now you're making me want to look at the ingredients and do it after it off.
So this yogurt, is it a sweet yogurt? What is it?
Oh, no. It's sour.
Sour.
It's
oh, my gosh.
I don't have sweet taste buds.
What about now these oranges? Are these oranges that look like grapefruits? They're real purple?
No. No, they're small, regular oranges. Heidi has to bring you one.
Yeah, actually, there's two on my desk. I might go run and get one. Yeah.
What are they called?
Caracara.
Okay.
Caracara. I mean, they do sort of taste like a mix of orange and grapefruit to me, though.
Okay.
Yeah. But they don't really look like it, necessarily. And so you're going to have either that or are the grapefruit good right now? I haven't had grapefruit in a long time.
Well, I haven't found any
Florida
grapefruit for quite a while, which worries me. But these were, I don't know, Texas or California. And I honor my mother by slicing one in half and cutting it into sections and eating it that way, which is kind of luxurious.
Yeah, so each little piece, you mean, within it?
Each little piece, and then squeeze it out, and then cut it in three pieces for compost and eat the eat part of the edges out before you throw it in the compost.
When I would visit my grandma, she would always have grapefruit, and she'd do that. She'd cut out each little section, and then you also got the special spoon, the serrated spoon to eat it with.
Pretty
exciting.
Of course.
Yeah.
It is a Midwestern luxury, I think. I suppose Southerners eat it that way too.
I heard you say earlier it worries me. By the sound of your voices, I don't think anything worries you. I think you just kind of go through life just as calm as a cucumber. Is that a good assertion?
Everything worries me, but I just cope.
Okay.
I refuse to be depressed.
Yeah, you go. Fight
and
back.
And you know, a lifelong acquaintance with KXC has helped that.
Aww.
Nice. So, did we talk about a beverage?
Coffee. Coffee with half and half.
Nice.
Just plain Jane coffee? Or are you a snob? Are you a coffee snob?
Oh, I'm a snob and I'm a hoarder.
Wait a minute.
I'm a cheap coffee hoarder.
Oh, so you like open up the cabinet and there's all kinds of coffee in there?
Yeah, all of them. Target, Aldi's, wherever I can find it. The Indian store with stuff from abroad that's a little acerbic for me.
Wow.
So you have all kinds of different kinds of coffee is what you're saying. Cause all of a sudden I was like, cause I'm a little bit cheap. I have one brand that I like that is really good. So I don't get all kinds of different brands, but I am a snob. I like the beans. I like the whole process. I like how great it smells when you grind your beans in the house.
Yep, like,
I love the noise of a coffee pot as it brews, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't do that. I just boil the water and steep it French method, not with a filter.
Not a pour over.
The acidity out of it, I think.
Yeah.
So, Suzanne, let's talk a little bit about getting up in the morning, because on Fridays when I get up, it's, you know, 5:20, 5:30, and I'm just useless. How are you in the morning? Are you a fireball, or are you crabby, or what's the deal here?
Oh, no, pretty useless until I have my first cup of coffee.
Where else are you going to get asked, are you a fireball in the morning? Where's that coming from, John?
Well, I mean, I am just useless in the morning. Like, I'm crabby.
Wow.
I'm not alone.
No.
Some people wake up just kind of just befuddled.
Yeah.
But so what you're saying, Suzanne, is you wake up and you're ready to go?
No.
Okay.
No, the idea of you guys got me out of bed early this morning. I always tune in on Tuesday and Friday mornings because I don't like to stream too much because I hate wasting electrons. But I tune in for music and for you two on Tuesday morning with John.
So it's the Johns that are drawing you here. The Latimer, the Bauer. It's great.
And the Heidi. And
we didn't find out where you're from, Suzanne. Where are you from?
Well, you know, I'm kind of schizophrenic. I have land near Savannah Portage State Park, and I go up there as much as I can. And then I'm based in Rochester because I'm feeding Dad 5 days a week. So I'm here in Rochester, and I like urban culture. I'm done with cities, and I also like being away from people and on the east side of Aiken County.
Nice. Sounds nice. Why do you support KAXE?
People powered.
It certainly is. So
I don't too old and move up north. I'll do a music show.
Oh, good. That would be great,
be
Suzanne.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, Homestead Mills is our sponsor, Suzanne. You want country blend cereal or wild rice pancakes?
You know I want pancakes.
We do know that. I love it.
Now, we also need to know where the heck to send it since you move around a lot. But we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think you have my current address.
Yep.
Make sure it has a 13 on the front of it.
Okay.
All right. And you have a good day, Suzanne. What are you gonna do today?
I'm a cook for Dad. I'm going to go to my book club in the afternoon, and then I'll probably go for a warm water swim in the evening.
That sounds lovely, but I need to know what will you be talking about at book club? What book?
Oh, let me remember. We're doing Tender Land, which I'd already read, so I had to read it again.
Okay. William Kent Kruger?
Tender Land. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.